thought you'd be listening to the podcast by now, didn't you? Not until you finish your homework. It's puns like that that I expected to come across when I checked out Games My Mom Found. It's a podcast that offered to give us a shout-out, and so I decided to listen to a little bit of their latest episode on Star Wars Republic Commando. Mike Albertan, Stuart Hughes, and Stephen JD talk about retro games. That seems like a fun time. They describe Republic Commando as a Splinter Cell meets Star Wars type game. Sounds like fun, and it's a great show, and I'm glad that they gave us a shout out. Thanks a lot, and we're here to return the favor. So enjoy the show, and get to that math homework eventually, alright? Hi Internet, my name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
I keep saying the name wrong, but this is bad because we're in Cuba.
Yes, get it right.
And this is us shouting out to you from our vacation. We're on the Royal Caribbean cruise to Key West and Cuba. Me for a pilgrimage? Is that what it's called?
Pilgrimage?
Hemingway.
Oh yes, the Hemingway pilgrimage.
Because we saw his house in Florida, and or in Key West in Florida, and
yeah, because apparently Key West seceded from Florida like a while ago. I didn't know that.
Yes, well,
symbolically it was... apparently, but whatever.
Right, and we went to the restaurant that he supposedly had visited, that was actually based on Sloppy Joe's restaurant in Cuba,
which he probably also visited.
I don't know what's true and what's a lie anymore. So before we left, though, we saw Godzilla King of the Monsters
because Melissa's, monsters.
I was going to say because you're a masochist, but we can go that way. Because growing up, I said this to Melissa before, this type of sci-fi bored me to tears. It was not something like, unless it had deep, you know, deep mores of the human experience, I was like, because the actors were all like cardboard cutouts. There would always be the same four people.
Mm-hmm.
The scientist, the military dude, the girl that screams, and the child actor and the weird supernatural, like, familiar to the animals were kind of like interchangeable.
Yes.
Sometimes you'd have one, sometimes you'd have the other, sometimes you'd have both. And yeah, it was just a bunch of people in rubber suits, like,
tromping
knocking
the
down
miniatures of Tokyo.
Lego cities. And it wasn't something that interests me. But I did see the reboot that they did with Bryan Cranston. I guess I should say it was the first American version since Godzilla in the 90s, the Matthew Broderick
right
one.
Which I also kind of liked.
And so for those of you who... Well, also,
probably
I should...
Probably the only one who
I should say
it,
since
but...
we're... What? Who?
I kind of like the Matthew Broderick one, although I'm probably the only person that kind of liked it. All right,
you don't get to talk for the next 5 minutes.
Hey.
the first...
Mom liked it too, so there.
the episode that I can lead you to on Hemingway, I forgot to say this, but we do have one on the Snows of Kilimanjaro, so please check that out. It's in our archive. And also, I wanted to shout out to my friend Will. He has a podcast called Bondzilla, where they alternate between Bond and Godzilla movies. And one thing that I noticed from listening to that was that there is kind of like this treasured history of practical effects,
mm-hmm,
that Godzilla is kind of a part of. And while people like me were just like, you know, saw these as just silly and, you know, couldn't relate to them. If you want to get some fandom of classic Godzilla movies, you should go there. He's a really good dude and friend of the show. He was on our Ant-Man and the Wasp episode. So going into this, what were your expectations?
I wanted to see a bunch of big monsters beating each other up. That's it.
Well, actually, a good entryway for me into this is that we talked after the movie about how our tastes are somewhat hard to pin down sometimes, because I somehow Black Swan got brought up.
Yeah, I don't remember why.
And I don't know how that became the linchpin to what became like the catalyst of me like, wait, Melissa does have taste.
Hey.
No, but what was weird was that it actually humbled me a little bit, because I think because there are a lot of like dark, twisted, weird things that I enjoy, and like I'm the one that showed you The Shining, and I'm the one that showed you Fight Club and all this stuff, even though I know you've seen Fight Club before, but that, since that's kind of like a lane that I've just discovered and been kind of seeped into horror and thrillers and stuff like that, and I'm writing stuff much more like that, I think I had pigeonholed you as you like the fantasy fun stuff, and that there's nothing outside of that that you like. But the more that we do episodes, the more that I'm finding that you like a whole bunch of different types of things.
Yes.
And it doesn't even necessarily fall into like just because you have a friend that, you know, introduced you to this thing. It's like genuinely like The Dark Crystal, you love that. And Fight Club, like you were saying that you were all over that. So what's interesting to me is that like this kaiju thing seems to have been like there's been a recent like renaissance of it.
Uh-huh.
And I really like Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
But it seems like a very interesting thing because it's half like mythology and a throwback to old monster stories, and half of it is like this very bro-y, like, let's kill the monsters with big guns kind of thing.
If you don't think that myth stories about fighting big monsters is just bro-y from 600 years ago, you haven't read enough of them.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing. It's just more flowery language because it's an older way of talking about it. But it's the same thing. It's a bunch of guys with big weapons going out to beat up monsters. It's the same story.
I mean, I would disagree.
Just without the scientists. The modern stuff has scientists as to why they have to explain why there's these big monsters. In the old days, it was just, there's big monsters, let's go kill them.
But, I mean, I would say that, like, something that I think Del Toro brought to Pacific Rim was that it was very schlocky monster beat-em-up thing. But there was that underlying theme of, like, you have to be fused with this other person.
Right, so there was a lot of memory stuff involved.
And so it's a weird, tricky thing because, like, you get things like Independence Day that really are just, let's watch things blow up. And, like, because there's charismatic people involved in it, it's like, I can sit here and watch Will Smith curse about aliens all day. But, like, there's really not... Like, it seems like with Roland Emmerich, like, all of his disaster movies are just, like, all of them have this kind of veneer of, like, if we band together, we can save the world. But there's not really, like, what gets my goat, like, what gets me going is, like, more of that, like, what do monsters mean?
Right.
And like, what about this particular monster makes it, this monster movie, any better than the hundreds of monster movies that have come before it? So with Godzilla, like that whole series, I was completely uninterested, but I think because, I think we're going to bring this up in our live show. It's going to be kind of my talking point. We're prospectively going to do it on Disney reboots. We've been talking about that, and, we have a live show, July 20th. I think it's on our, Twitter. I changed the header so that it's our date. We're going to be at Podfest Philly. Anyway, so because Lion King's coming out that weekend, we were going to make that our thing. And it seems like because we're getting all these reboots of things, we're getting a lot of like, this is the gritty, dark, serious version of this thing, right?
And yeah, so they didn't do that with this one.
No.
Not at all.
But they did it with... the first reboot, I think.
Okay.
I would make that case for that.
But, I think the other thing I like about it, too, is a lot of monster movies are horror movies. And this isn't a horror movie. This is just... It's more like a disaster movie, mm-hmm. I guess. right?
Yeah.
Because it's like monsters on a huge level. It's not just monsters like, oh no, he's going to eat us all. It's like monsters like, New York's not going to be there tomorrow. So like, it's more disaster movie type plotting.
Right.
Where it's like, we all have to band together to fight the monsters. As opposed to, let's all run away because there's some psychological horrifying thing happening.
Right. So I brought this up during Song of Achilles because even though this is my nuance to my taste, is that like, Song of Achilles was super, like, grimdark, historical fiction, fantasies thing. And I didn't like it just because it's dark doesn't mean I'm going to like that. And I ended up not liking Song of Achilles. But during that episode, I was talking about, like, you can go dark with something as long as you have a point to it, or you can go super, you know, bright with something and have it be something that still interests me. But with you know, this, because there was all these reboots, like with The Dark Knight and with the Daniel Craig Bond, I kind of want to give these long-running franchises a chance if they're going to try something new with it. And what's interesting is that they have this theme of, okay, Godzilla is on our side, right? If we just trust him to fight, I'm going to look up the actor's name, but the actor that they get, that his character is consistently, like, pulling for Godzilla,
yeah,
he makes you really believe that in a way that me watching the old films, I couldn't, like, identify with.
Right.
It's like we always talk about mom, like, watching the old Lord of the Rings cartoons and not really connecting with
right,
it
with what the
in
story
any
was.
Visceral way. If you could say one thing that might differentiate this in your mind from older monster movies, or conversely, if it's the same thing that draws you to these that has drawn you to other monster things, the floor is yours as I look for this actor's name.
Well, like I said, I like the necessity of having people pull together and defeat the bad guys and figure out what's going on. Because it wasn't just, oh, let's kill all the bad things because they're popping out now. They had to figure out what the problem was and fix it.
Right.
I think this one was good because it gave individuals chances to be heroes. Like, I liked the different characters that got to be heroes. Mm-hmm. In the story. Especially the like you're saying, the scientist who was pulling for Godzilla the whole time, and the child actor who was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She was 11 from Stranger Things. I don't remember her name, which is terrible. But she was awesome.
I shall read all the actors.
Okay.
The floor is still yours.
And I liked how they dug into sort of the mythology of Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
They did mention the whole, well, we woke these things up because we've been nuking the planet kind of thing, which is kind of like, when mom first told us where Godzilla actually, the movie came from, when it was basically Japan saying these horrible Americans nuked us and then woke this beast and now it's, you know, and then Americans took it and were like, hey, this is the coolest monster ever. We totally need to make all the movies of this thing. It's just become this kind of goofy American icon now, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't supposed to be ours, because mm-hmm. Americans do these things. Mm-hmm. But they dug into making it like a worldwide mythological thing, like that they used to all run the world, all mm-hmm. the different parts of the world, and they had like different creatures depending on where they were from and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the big, beautiful, bad guy. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. The Hydra thing. Whatever his name is.
Okay, so we'll get to that. I'll allow you to fangirl over your dark...
the dark, horrible evil that we're not supposed to like, that I liked anyway.
But you tapped into something that my friend Will brought up in his first, like, initial reactions of the King of the Monsters, was they harped much more on, like, having faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting because... like you were saying, like, they make it much more of a universal, like, symbol.
Right.
That, like, that there are these kind of, like, because they keep referring to them as titans, so I guess if you were to make a direct, like, analogy, it could be, you know, Greek, but, like, But they hint because they have this kind of, like, faux, spoiler alert, for those of you who don't want to know this, not really directly related to any major spoilers, but they go to this kind of, like, Atlantis-type place, and that's where they discover these things about the Titans.
Right.
And it, so it hints that it's even, like, prehistoric,
right,
basically. So Millie Bobby Brown is the girl that plays Eleven.
Yes.
And she's Madison.
In this movie. Actor in this whole movie.
And Ken Watanabe.
Hands down. Who is this?
He's my favorite.
Say it again.
It's Ken Watanabe.
Okay.
He was Dr. Eiichiro Serizawa. And yeah, I like the gravity that they both kind of bring to the storylines. So the actual plot is that
everybody else was just ticked at each other all the time and screaming. Not very well.
That's what I'm about to get into, is that Kyle Chandler plays Mark Russell and Vera Farmiga plays Dr. Emma Russell. He is kind of off somewhere, like photographing.
Studying wolves.
Wolves, yes. And Emma is with her daughter on some kind of like research, in some research facility. And you get the idea that they're, you know, estranged. And there's a very good, nice, subtle filmmaking thing to show just Mark's character crying out a name that you don't know, and like his family is all around him sad. You didn't need anything else.
Yeah.
You just needed that, and you're just like, yep, somebody got squashed in
by the Godzilla. Got prequel.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
So, that's, you get that whole backstory of, like, you know, they're estranged because their son died. But you find out that Emma is working on something to, and it's kind of disguised throughout the movie that, like, she is kidnapped by, what's his name from Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Lannister.
Yes.
Lannister
Charles
Senior.
Dance, who plays Jonah Allen. And, so at first you think that she's being forced to work with him, but then, spoiler alert again, it turns out that she's doing this on purpose. So this was probably my biggest, if I were to make a criticism of the movie, that, like, it was a lot to
there was
believe.
A lot of twists going on.
It was a lot to believe that anybody would willingly unleash these things on the earth. And
think that was going to restore balance to the ecosystem.
Right. And so it's a weird thing because, like, if she was just evil and it didn't want you, if the movie didn't want you to sympathize with her after that, then that might have been an easier pill to swallow.
Yeah, because I didn't feel any sympathy for her after that.
Yeah.
I did for the kid, because the kid was amazing.
Right. And so like, Millie Bobby Brown does a lot to be like, you know, this is still my mom, and I don't want her to get smushed by an electric eel multi-headed thing. So
the electric hydra, is that what it is now?
Yeah. So, I think that was the thing that, like, sometimes was distracting from the good stuff. Which, I will say, as much as I was weirded out by the fact that my sister was like, the big hydra thing that wants to destroy the world, I love that thing.
It was amazing looking.
But it goes to something. I have another friend that I shout out all the time, Jason Farron, who makes really awesome monster art. And anybody who can make a cool monster design is okay in my book. Because there's something about something that looks like an animal, but is somehow, you know, they took the head of this thing and put it on this thing, and then, ooh, that's cool. So I can understand why you would like this weird thing, even though it's trying to eat
everybody
and destroy everything. But yeah, the main idea that you learn is that there's a rival. They say it in the trailer. There's a rival alpha to Godzilla, and it's interesting though that I didn't really see that coming. That, like, he needs to assert his dominance and have, you know, all these different other, like, somehow it didn't click to me just from the trailer that they were gonna have, like, I think they said, like, 27 or something.
Oh, wow.
Creatures
that
he's kind of, like, you know, commanding.
Controlling.
And I really did like the, excuse me, as broy as it was, the comedy in it, like, I liked, there's an actor that I've seen in a couple of different things. I'll read his name when I pull the cast list back up, but I've seen him in a bunch of, kind of sci-fi fantasy things. He's kind of like a mainstay. Actually, both actors, there was a guy that was the guy you see in the trailer that was reading stuff to Congress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's from Silicon Valley. He's pretty funny. And I liked, I'm glad that he didn't pull like a, I'm trying to think of a bad comic relief. I won't throw anybody under the bus, but when you have a monster movie and you don't have really much written for you, sometimes it can be grating to have, this is the funny dude.
Right.
And he didn't do that, which I was grateful for. But yeah, I had fun.
I thought it was enjoyable. Yes. If you like to watch monsters, giant monsters clash, it was good. Like I said, the plot was a bit of a stretch, at least the woman's part. I didn't like the father's part much either. I was just Japanese guy and the little girl.
Yeah,
I could have cut out the parents entirely and I wouldn't care.
I think that storyline is very difficult to do well, because these people, like you were saying, it kind of just felt like they were fighting the whole movie, and there wasn't really much that you could expect that to change. You know, like, it just kind of felt like I said, like something that was distracting from the stuff that you wanted to see work. But, yeah, I would say that I would recommend it. And I like that it, even though I am fans of things like Dark Knight and 007, the Casino Royale series onward, I like that they didn't feel the need to make it super edgy.
Right.
Like, they did show people getting swept up in, like, a tornado and stuff like that. But it wasn't that Roland Emmerich disaster movie porn stuff. Where you're just watching whole cities be destroyed and that's the only
thing that you're getting out of the
movie. It was nice that it was, like, had some, like, deeper themes of religion and eco-politics and stuff like that. But it had a good even-handed thing of that versus, like, you know, actual stakes with characters that you care about. That was the big thing to me of the original, the Roland Emmerich Godzilla, was that after you watch Independence Day, Matthew Broderick is not Will Smith.
No.
I'm not gonna sit there and watch a Godzilla movie it was such a weird thing to get a Godzilla movie, which at the time I was not excited for, and then Matthew Broderick
it was just as like nothing to you either, so
and it with his other stuff, like with Independence Day and with like Day After Tomorrow or something, there are some bigger symbols involved, at least, like there's different like characters are actually having discussions.
Right.
And it could be didactic, but at least that's happening. With Godzilla, there was kind of like a relationship thing in there.
Somewhere.
And there was a French, like, taxi driver.
Is that the one, though, that ends with Godzilla shooting stuff down Mechagodzilla's throat? No, that was the other one.
Yeah, that's not the Matthew Broderick one, though.
No, I didn't think so. That's the one that ends with the eggs. Underground.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, that didn't happen. Graciously. We did not get many...
Many little baby Godzillas?
Yeah.
You wouldn't like little baby Godzilla? That would have been so cute.
I think this is another case of Melissa's very easy please when there's...
Cute little baby monsters.
Yeah. Apparently.
Yes.
We're all learning things. yeah, that brings up the weird, like, Godzuki...
Oh, yeah, never mind.
No iteration of that character.
Nope.
has ever
been appealed to me. No, not at all. Yeah, okay. I take it back.
And I feel like if they had done that movie, they would have tried to make it like, so it's a little baby Godzilla and it needs to get back to his mommy.
Yeah.
But his mommy's tearing up.
Yeah, his mom's busy tearing up Tokyo right now, so.
It's funny because it's very easy, I think, if you watch reviews online for it, to rip into that movie, just because it really lacks an identity.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that really affects, like, if I see it on, I'm not gonna, like, of all movies to hate on,
right.
You hate that one. There's a lot easier, you know, anyway, there's a lot more offensive stuff to me, like, you know, some of the newer, before Spider-Man Homecoming, some of the other Spider-Man movies that were just kind of blah. I care much more about Spider-Man, so I'm gonna
obviously get more upset about that.
A certain way
than
about
if those. They mess up Godzilla, which is like, it's Godzilla, so whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have any passion in any specific way. But, like, I'm actually writing something that will prospectively have kaiju in it, and so it's cool to see that becoming something that didn't just have Pacific Rim. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's cool to me that this seems like a really big summer movie, and that we're getting movies like this that have some kind of, you know, backing in, like, mythological things, and they're being, like, that being a theme that it deals with. Certainly, that they're gonna make it as bombastic as possible. But like you're saying, like, I agree that those, you kind of want your dip your toes in both ways. Like, if it's only going to be about, like, can this monster restore people's faith in humanity, I think you get something like the first one where you just kind of see little hints of this monster and it was trying to be a little bit too artistic and you lost the spirit of what makes Godzilla what it is.
Which is lots of screaming people and monsters dropping whole skyscrapers.
Yeah, because you need to feel the power of what's happening.
Yeah.
And so, I personally, growing up,
which I think they did the best job of that with Rodan coming out of
volcano. But, yeah, let's get into some of that. I think after the break, we'll talk more about specifically what monsters we like and the mid-roll. So, if you had to pick a favorite monster boy...
Depends. What do we count as monsters? We're talking like big scary monsters.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing is that there's not really an English word for it, because like growing up for me, Power Rangers was the only thing in that realm of kaiju, and so it and like Transformers seem to be somewhat in that thing of like big huge.
Right,
things that
fall. Things.
So, but like, there wasn't really any monsters from Power Rangers that I really glommed onto.
Yeah, because they weren't recurring usually.
Yeah, and I don't know how much they changed from the Japanese show. I don't know if you're aware, but
they
cut in footage and stuff. So, it seems like in the American version, they focused much more on the high school kids and like getting you to like them, and they had this two like kind of incompetent bullies / comic reliefs that were in I don't know what Sweet Valley High or what the heck, I don't know what it's called. Anyway, but yeah, that was kind of, but I remember I had a Godzilla toy, so I did like the idea of Godzilla. But when it came to watching the movies, I was kind of like, meh. Not really my thing. But I don't know. So what do you think, if you were to narrow down what about this idea of the big monster that impresses you? Is it so primordial that it's not beyond words?
I think my favorite's dragons. And kaiju are fairly close to dragons, some of them. Like, the Hydra thing was very close to a dragon.
That's a good point, though.
Just the idea of the ancientness of them and the power of them. You know, like, they could wipe the planet clean if they felt like it. Just the raw chaotic, like you were saying, how they tend to stand for like chaotic power of them. Like, it's the same reason I like thunderstorms and stuff. Just something that big and raw and powerful that you have no idea what it's about to do next. It's just, I don't know, fascinating.
And I think that the our relationship with dragons, they brought this up in the movie, is one of, in Western culture, they're an enemy. You defeat them to get the gold. But in Eastern cultures, there is this idea of it being this wise being, sometimes benevolent, sometimes it is something that challenges you, but when you defeat it, it's like you either like obtain its power or
right,
like there's, it's much more of a spiritual type of connection with them. So what's interesting is that even though originally, like you were saying, like the idea was much more of this bro code of you defeat the dragon, you get its stuff.
Kill dragon, pick up loot.
It's kind of evolved into this, into that similar Eastern thing here in some ways. And so when you see a dragon, you can associate it with Dungeons and Dragons. You can associate it with Dragon Age. Like, there's a bunch of video games where
right.
they take much more of the idea of the Eastern. You have Dragon Ball Z. There's a dragon, I think, at the end of The Last Airbender. So it's something that's slowly starting to pierce the veil, and even though nobody would really say outright or maybe even think that I believe in this power of the dragon, like, there's, it's still part of culture. It's part of this conversation. Now, I think what's interesting is that it's been in the rumor mill for a while that they're going to try to do a King Kong versus Godzilla thing. And from what I heard about when they tried to do Freddy versus Jason, it's kind of a weird conundrum, because if they're setting up Godzilla as this, like,
as a good guy.
Good guy.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, how would you know who to root for? Because they're both supposed to be...
And King Kong historically has been this kind of, like, yes, he's savage, but it's much more of what Americans kind of use, is that, like, I mean, it's been rebooted several times. It's this creature who humanity is destroying.
It.
Yeah. And so there's, like, in the 70s, I think it was more used as, like, a ecological symbol. Originally, it was kind of this tragic romance thing. And it's kind of weird because you get into a lot of rough racial stuff.
Yeah.
But you still get this idea of there. You're supposed to feel bad for the big monkey after he gets
right.
shot by all the,
right.
the people.
All the planes are just, he's just like, he's just trying to chill, and then you drag him out here and treat him terrible, and you wonder why he
yeah.
goes crazy.
It's
on
kind
you.
Of the beginnings of, like, that Jurassic Park thing of, like, man's hubris.
Man was not meant to mess with these things.
Right. So it's interesting that they're even thinking about doing a King Kong versus Godzilla, because I'll be interested to see what, you know, side, because that's the thing, when you get these two things that are such big icons, it's the problem that Marvel and DC have always had about trying to share some kind of storyline, is that, well, this person's not, doesn't appear as much as this person, and that happened actually in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, when Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny appear, they had to appear for the same length of time,
right,
contractually. Because it's not really anybody's specific cartoon universe. It's just kind of this
right,
like thing. But yeah, so I'm intrigued. And I didn't see Kong Skull Island. Did you hear anything positive or negative about that?
I have not seen that. And oddly enough, giant apes are just like not my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, probably not the right word for that, but.
Melissa's playing Words with Friends.
I'm posting pictures of Havana.
Don't shout at them because you're angry at me.
I'm not angry at him. I just shout all the time at him for no reason. It's terrible. I'm trying to get better. I am, Internet. I promise.
I just did some reverse psychology to get her.
To get me to pay attention. But like I said, I'm not, like, huge into giant apes at all. I don't know why. Maybe because of the whole Africa tie-in thing, like they're trying to make it this like.
Yeah, I don't think it's obvious. I don't think it's obvious that like white producers at the time were not trying to make some statement about savages being like, you know, these powerless things to. It's a weird thing because like you say with that movie, they're bringing this thing from this exotic place, and it's somehow the most savage and scary thing in the world, and also it fell in love with this white woman,
right?
And everybody killed it because it was pursuing this white woman,
right?
So it's a weird thing because it's like it's one of those subconscious things that it's like, you know, it's not like the government was using that as like a manifest destiny thing. That's not really how it works in our country, but at the same time, it's still kind of weird. So yeah, I'm interested that with voices like Guillermo del Toro, and now so with did you see the second Pacific Rim?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
seems like it made a lasting impression.
No, it did. It's just I had to remember because they were. Yeah, I did.
Okay, because the guy, John Boyega, who plays Finn in Star Wars, who was in the second Pacific Rim movie, is actually a producer on Pacific Rim 2. And that was intriguing to me just because, number one, when you see people like Jordan Peele, you know, parlaying their success into this is the movie I want to get made, it seemed to me like that was what happened with him. He's like, I enjoy doing sci-fi fantasy stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I want to be a part of this movie.
Because the cool thing with the second one was that the bad guy...
I involuntarily started crossing my arms.
The bad guy found one of the kaiju brains and was melding with it.
Mm.
So it had, like, driven him nuts.
Mm.
And they managed to meld kaiju brains with the Jaegers.
Mm-hmm.
So they had Jaegers that had been taken over by the kaiju hive mind thing. And so they had to fight other Jaegers. It wasn't just Jaeger on monster action. It was Jaeger on Jaeger action. It was pretty fun.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I think that we've talked about... This is one thing I'll say, that if any of our podcast sounds pedantic, I think that, like, just because I enjoy using big words doesn't mean I feel that they're more important than good storytelling, right? So, like, it was very simple for them in King of the Monsters. Yes, King of the Monsters.
Yes.
To just kind of say, like, yes, there were once dragons. That wasn't, like, a whole
monologue. They didn't, like, go into a whole big, long scientific... It's like, no, they used to be titans, and they used to rock the world, and now they're back.
Yes.
So, deal with it.
They weren't sassy black women about it, but they...
Snapped. Look like phone and everything.
But that it was very easy for them to just pay homage to certain historical things, and that I think is enough for audiences that are looking for those types of stories to be satisfied.
Yeah.
Does it need to be Shakespeare?
No.
And so in a similar way, I forgot where I was.
I don't know where you were going with that.
Well, don't just leave me hanging here.
No,
well,
you were talking about
the Pacific Rim
that.
Yeah. The Pacific Rim movies have this kind of idea. Like, when you get into certain sci-fi ideas, they don't need to be super deep in order to be satisfying. And so I feel like with the first Pacific Rim, they set up this universe where brains meld and certain alien parts of me used on the black market. And those were just really cool creative ideas for a movie, the movie that it was setting up. So the fact that they continue to use those things, like, it's going to get sci-fi fans excited that you're doing something original. Like,
yeah.
coming up with fun ideas, and it doesn't have to be some kind of Christ allegory or some deep political espionage or something to be intelligent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about King of the Monsters and Pacific Rim and some of these kind of kaiju things. Anything else you want to talk about the genre, about Godzilla?
No, I think we covered it.
I think somebody's tired.
Hey, we've been running around in like 90 degree temperature for 2 days. I think I'm allowed to be a little tired.
You're allowed to be. It just doesn't make you very talkative.
No.
The last thing I'll say is that the Japanese factor is interesting because it wasn't really a topic in the movie, and like you said, like they tried their best to make it very.
It's very global.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated. It was like, it wasn't just, oh, this is a Japan problem. It's like, no, there are these things everywhere.
Yeah.
So this is a world problem.
What I think is interesting is, like, you seem to like Pacific Rim, but you aren't very interested in anime.
No.
And I was hoping you could talk about some anime maybe that might have turned you off into looking into other ones.
Mm.
If there's any specific thing, or if it's just you saw
one. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I liked Last Airbender. That counts, right?
That's a big. I can't get into that because there's a whole bunch of nerds that.
Oh, that will say
would
that
yell
count.
At me.
Okay. Well, I don't know what that counts as then. I tried to watch.
Full
Metal
Alchemist.
Because
it's kind of I looked it up once. It was like there's an American studio and there's a Korean, I think, studio, and so it's weird because. It's a genre in, there's like Japanimation and then there's Chinese anime. So it's weird because number one, people can't really agree whether it's a studio thing or there is it's a medium. Like there's anime type stories.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's a botched version of this. Don't yell at me, internet.
I tried to watch Fullmetal Alchemist. And most of it I thought was really interesting. Like, I liked the story. I liked the concept of the kind of magic they were using and whatever. But there are certain cultural things that they tend to put into these stories that weird me out.
This is part of... I would have assumed before you started reading X-Men Red that maybe the serialized nature of it, the fact that, like... Because I know from manga... that you, if you're investing in it, you're investing in this whole huge pantheon of things,
right.
Much like with comic books. So as somebody that, until X-Men Red hadn't been a fate, like, that's the first series that you're like, okay, I got the second trade paperback.
Right.
It's interesting to me that you're, that, I would have thought that that would be one of the major things that would turn you off to anime. But the thing, I think I was projecting somewhat because some of the weird ideas, like you're talking about, you just can't really... you can't really relate to.
Yeah.
Because there's just other tropes that they have that just, like, you run into and you're just like, that, I don't understand that. I don't know how you can translate that in a way that's gonna satisfy me as a viewer.
Right.
And that lost in translation thing kind of gives you this weird...
Yeah.
Feeling and you're just
like
I'd rather just...
I don't quite understand why they have this in here or... why they think it's amusing,
because,
so I'm
like,
not going to watch this anymore.
I think with all the kind of fan service-y stuff, I don't really see the difference between, like, what I am reading and what we're preparing also for a live show in Wizard World of Philly. It's going to be June 15th. For those of you who still want to get tickets, you can see us Saturday morning at 11:30. I don't really see the difference between some of the stuff they do in X-Men and in American comics with fan service and what they do in anime. It's just the things, there are certain, like the young thing, the sexualization of young women.
Yeah.
is a particular weird thing. But I think in comics, they kind of flirt with that too a little bit, just because a lot of the characters are kind of amorphous ages,
Right.
You're not really sure what age they are. So, I would...
Now, the one that in Fullmetal Alchemist got me was the... There's an older general guy who is infatuated with the alchemist's kid. And I'm like, I know he's not... Well, he might have been older at some point, but now he's in a kid's body or something weird. I'm not quite sure what's going on with that one. Anyway, he's young, and it's just strange. I'm like, I don't understand why this is funny. It's not funny. It's creepy, and it needs to go away.
Yeah. I think one thing to explain it, and it's not in defense of it, but I think in America, we're much more forward with sexuality in terms of conversation. So I think one reason why it might be funny in their culture is because it's a lot less talked about. And so there's a lot of those things that bubble in the surface of their art because it's not part of public parlance, maybe. It's just a gross generalization. But I can understand some of those things that have turned me off in some sci-fi things. But most, or manga, anime things, strike that, reverse it. But there are some that are seemingly to me made for, or at least breakthrough to American audiences that are pretty interesting. Full Metal Jacket's one that I've... Full Metal Jacket.
The wrong one.
That's a Kubrick Vietnam movie.
Not the same thing.
Full Metal Alchemist is one of them that I heard a lot of Americans like. Attack on Titan is a big kind of kaiju one. They're more like zombies. In the sense that they're not really animal-like at all. They're just these huge, kind of nude monster things that attack this one society, and there's all these zip-lining warriors that try to fight them. And that's much more of like a military-style thing. Like, think, I guess, like Lord of the Rings. Like, there's different battles and whatnot. And I tend to gravitate more towards, like, the very... magical real ones. So I watched Silver Spoon, which was like a cute, like, I'm running away from home to a school and making all these new friends, and they help him make a pizza and like decide whether he wants to kill the pig that he raised and different things like that. So it's like a very teenage drama thing, and I watched that with my grandma, so it's completely free of any like weird fetish stuff. And then I also watched Erased with her, which is a lot more dark, but it's kind of, it deals with that weird mind switch thing that happens sometimes in anime.
I liked some of the ones that came out after The Matrix. They did some anime
Matrix that, yeah, that was, they marketed that hard towards, because I remember that being in Blockbuster. This is dating me, but I remember there being a wall of anime, and a lot of it was like weird over sexualized women, and as an 8-year-old I was just like, again, but then I recognized the green font from Matrix, so I was like, oh, this is, I know what this means. So I've heard a lot of people say good things about that. There was a Batman one that they did kind of like that, where they did multiple, I'm pretty sure they did it the same way. The same animation studio, I think, did multiple storylines, and one is like a weird magical real type thing where it's like showing Batman as if he's like a shogun fighting Joker, who has like this mask on, and it's very kind of interpretive of it. But anyway, that's our anime crash course. And I just wanted to go into it because it's something that we don't often talk about, because I'm not a big anime fan. I've just had some that I've liked, and I just knew that was something that you had kind of, with Japanese storytelling, I know that there's different things that didn't, like, connect for you in different ways, and it never struck me as anything that you were like, you know, being a snob about or something.
No, I just,
storytelling things that, if,
there,
no matter what the culture
was. There
are
many things about Japanese culture that I'm
confused,
not, that I don't
slash,
connect with. Scared by.
Yeah. So, that I think about does it us with Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Good movie. Good summer pop. Did you just roar at me? Alright, I need to go before I get electrocuted by
Kudira.
Miss Hydra here.
Haha.
Alright, well, talk to you later, guys.
Bye.